So without any further ado, I'll invite Julia to come and make her presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick, and it's warm enough to do with the last coat anymore. It's getting a bit hotter in here. So. Yeah, thank you for inviting me. And I'm working at the newish Centre for Agroecology and Food Security, which is a joint research initiative between Coventry University and Garden Organic, formerly HDRA, which a lot of you probably know about. Thank you. So we just started last January, but built on about 25 to 30 years of long-term research experience between both organisations. And the kind of thing we're trying to do, I mean, we've used the term, the name agroecology in our title, which kind of is quite ambitious of us, because obviously a lot of people within the university also need to learn about agroecology and what it means. So one of the first things that we've done is to commission and produce a peer-reviewed paper on mainstreaming an agroecological approach and what it would mean for UK and international farming systems. And there's copies of the brief at the back of the room if any of you want it later, and we will be producing the full document online within the next couple of months. But normally we're not able to commission research ourselves. We don't have that kind of internal funding in the university. So normally we have to look for external funding, and that's one of the challenges we're facing and that all research is facing, is how to do research on agroecological issues when the donor agencies are not really backing that, and it's weighted, and the funding approaches are weighted against that. The other thing we're trying to do, obviously, is education and training at a undergraduate and postgraduate level. So we're starting a master's degree in sustainable agriculture. And again, it's quite interesting at a time where in the UK, other agricultural colleges such as the Y College have closed down, research centres have closed down. So this initiative is just starting to see, you know, what we can take forward and pick up from that. But again, we're facing some challenges. For example, the university also runs MBA courses, so we thought, well, we really need to have a look at what's being taught in the MBA courses as well, because it's a lot of business managers and economists who are going in to manage agricultural programmes. So trying to change those courses within the university is quite a challenge because of the inability to change key basic modules for various reasons. So it's all very well to talk about change and changing education, but when we actually try to do it, you know, there are these challenges we keep coming up against. We ran a couple of short courses at the end of last year where we had an Australian permaculture trainer coming up to run a continuing professional development course, which was a brilliant course. But again, we, you know, trying to get people to come along to the course and subscribe was very difficult. You know, if you look in the Farmers Weekly or the Farmers Guardian, you see all these issues being discussed about, you know, droughts in the south of England and floods in the north of England, or, you know, livestock diseases. These courses will cover all those issues and show solutions. And the whole farming sector is under that kind of pressure, but trying to get people to come to learn about a different way of doing things, you know, we're finding to be a challenge, which is fine. We'll just need to sort of get over it. But that's what we're encountering at the moment. So, you know, I was thinking, well, is there something we're doing wrong, or is there something else we could be doing? Because instead of churning out more information, more peer-reviewed literature, more reports, are there other strategies or tactics we could take when we're trying to change mindset? So just in thinking about this, and you know, you probably know all this already, but you know, what is it we're trying to move from and towards? So this is the industrialised mindset or paradigm versus the ecological mindset or paradigm. And, you know, you probably already know this, so industrial is a focus on monocultures, ecological paradigm, it's a focus on polycultures and biodiversity, or simple uniformity versus location-specific complexity. So there's these two different perspectives, and we're trying to move from one to the other. But the challenge I found, and I went to Cuba about 10, 15 years ago to interview the farming sector there and food sector to see what challenges they'd encountered in their shift supposedly to a more ecological agriculture. And what seemed to come out was that the main thing was this sort of misperception and lack of logic in thinking. So people tend to think organic or ecological agriculture meant or was the same as the low input agriculture, which meant lower yields. And there in Cuba at the time when they had a great crisis, but we still have this mentality here now when we're not in crisis, it was anti-policy, or actually in Cuba the organic sector was being branded as being anti-revolutionary because it wasn't in line with government policies to maximise yields because people needed food. So you can kind of understand that logic, but it's wrong. It's wrong in terms of organic agriculture doesn't mean low input, and low input doesn't mean low yield. So how can we kind of try and provide more knowledge or change that perspective? And there were two ways that seemed to come out of that research, two directions. People all said that they would like more information, more knowledge if it was available. They would like to see it. So there seemed to be a need for increasing ecological literacy. And then the other thing was that sort of beyond agribusiness, because in Cuba there was no private sector, but there was still this underlying fear about what would happen if everyone farmed ecologically. And that was based on what I'd say the industrialised mindset, which is, and out of the industrialised mindset, corporates and the way they're operating is a manifestation of it. But what we seem to need to do is to really tackle that mindset in the first place. So just picking up on those two issues, ecological literacy to start with. I have handouts if you'd like one as well, but they're very small, so I could pass them around later. Okay, I'll pass the handout around later if anyone wants to see it. So ecological literacy has been defined as the ability to understand the natural systems that make life on Earth possible. And that's quite a nice definition. It's really fundamental. I don't think anyone could disagree with that. Thank you. And that means, you know, what I would say, that means, first of all, yes, we do need more information and evidence to be available. We've been doing some research last year on whether a climate-friendly agriculture could feed a population of 9 billion in 2050, and trying to find evidence on that, yes, it could. We know there's anecdotal evidence, there's NGO reports, but trying to find anything that's really acceptable was almost impossible. And the only places, you know, there's lots of evidence from, say, permaculture examples or organic examples, but they haven't been written up in a form that we can use or studied properly in a form that we can really use. So we do need more evidence and information, but on top of that, you know, there's this thing about changing the paradigm in education, and this isn't a new thing, but, you know, focusing on holism, systems thinking, sustainability and complexity. I mean, this is about 30 years old, but it's still not really sort of been pushed through in educational circles. And then there's also this need to bring ecological economics to the fore. David Orr, who coined the term ecological literacy, says that all education is environmental education. By what is included or excluded, we teach the young that they are part of or apart from the natural world. So it's this idea of separation, and, you know, we're all feeling separate, and the environment is out there, and agriculture is somewhere else, whereas it's all the same. And so, you know, it's not just a matter of producing more information, but it's also about how we're teaching and providing information and the ways we're doing it. And that's why the economic aspect is really important, and that's why we're trying to tackle this through a changing MBA program. So the other aspect that I've mentioned was just about this fear behind the industrialised mindset. We're trying to understand a fear, just because if we can understand what's going on there, then maybe we can sort of do something to help ease that fear and change it. So David Orr also said that the goal of ecological literacy is to build on the recognition that the disorder of ecosystems reflects the prior disorder of mind. So it's the way we're thinking, which is reflected in the way we treat our environment. And again, when I was doing my research in Cuba, I mentioned before, there's no private sector, so there's no corporate interests there, but there's still the same mentality. There's a high level of industrialisation and this obsessive focus on increasing yield. So it's a misperception and lack of logic around the ability of or ecological production to perform in the face of scientific evidence. And there was this underlying fear around a lack of food or a fear of starvation, and also an underlying fear about a loss of control, and that could be control over nature, or control over farmers and the chaos that might ensue. So there's these fears about lack and fears about loss of control which are driving a lot of this. And I don't think we've really sort of tackled that properly, or if we did, would that help us? Would we be more successful in our work that we're doing? So I kind of thought that the industrialised mindset is the underlying psychological state that drives the development of technologies, including GM, in the absence of evidence on their efficacy. And that's the kind of definition I just throw out there. So can we use eco-psychology based on that as a tool for change? Is there anything we can learn from eco-psychology? In the transition movement, Rob Hopkins used this idea about that society is addicted to oil, and this the thing about the human addiction to oil and how can we wean ourselves off addiction. So could we use a metaphor in the way we work with nature, maybe a metaphor of an abusive relationship, or using types of fear-based approaches, and how could we change those, drawing from psychological theory. So trying to treat abusive or fearful sort of characteristics, that in the literature there are several ways of treating it, and one is to help people to understand that they're not the only ones doing that, they're not alone and they're not being singled out, and also to make sure that show that they're respected and show them that they have the potential to change, that it's not they're not like on the sort of hamster wheel, but that they need to recognise what they have been doing and be held responsible for it, because there's still a lot of denial in the agricultural sector, denial that pesticides are doing any harm still. But also it helps if they can develop empathy for that which they have harmed, and you know, the sort of perpetrator-victim relationship. If you can understand what it is that you're harming, you stop harming it. There's that kind of theory. And for instance, with soils, if we can really show how soils are actually working and the life forms that are in there, and if we can help people to understand that then they might stop actually continuing with harmful practices. Also, guidance tends to come from someone who is respected or looks up to, and people can learn to understand and control their fears in other ways. So, you know, some of these I just thought might be helpful, certainly for me, in what work we're trying to do in trying to persuade or discuss or put out information or teach. You know, can we learn from any of this? And finally, it's not just about us and them. It's, you know, we all have aspects of this in ourselves. Thank you. So, you know, and there's many examples within the ecological sector of this kind of thing. Just to kind of go back to this policy paper, that if anyone's interested, you know, we've got various conclusions, but the overall ones are that, you know, of all the production approaches, agroecological systems hold the highest potential to be robust, regenerative and productive, and we already have the knowledge to mainstream agroecology, and any resistance to mainstreaming is really ideologically or politically driven. And there's a load of other sort of sub themes within this report that you can refer to. So this might be useful in our work as well. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Julia. And I think, as Julia was saying, this idea of trying to get people to understand through the sort of eco-literacy and eco-psychology is... I take it as an interesting dimension and something we could come back to, particularly in the conversation after these presentations.